John, in President Trump's first year, he, and you have already called him out for not being appropriately presidential, I think is a fair way to put it, in some of the tweets and other things. I guess I want to ask you about this famous poll comment. This was pretty disgusting, wasn't it?
Well, I think it was wrong, and I said at the time that it was inappropriate. And it doesn't advance our national interests in terms of our relations with other countries. So I'm hopeful that while that was a private conversation, apparently, I'm still hopeful that those kind of things will not continue.
You've been supporting a post office for Maurice Hinchey.
Yeah.
He's gone now, but he was a very liberal fellow and interviewed him on this very program many times. What makes you a fairly conservative Republican supporter of Hinchey post office?
Well, it's to name the post office in his hometown of Saugerties after him. And I thought that was an appropriate thing to do. It was actually suggested to me by a staffer who works in Congress for Congresswoman Louise Slaughter from Rochester, who previously worked as the chief of staff for Congressman Hinchey. And he said to us, gee, why not consider doing this? And I said, that's a great idea.
How about, speaking of naming of things, how about naming the Tappan Zee Bridge for Mario Cuomo?
I didn't agree with taking Malcolm Wilson's name off there. But that's an issue for the state legislature. I'm no longer in the state legislature, so
yeah. But you have opinions.
You have
family. You talk to them. What do you say around the table when it comes up to that?
It hasn't come up.
It hasn't come up. Oh, I guess you and Governor Cuomo have had some contretemps lately. You want to talk about that at all?
Not really.
Well, I'll ask you then.
You can ask me a question
specifically about
that. A wide, open-ended question. I generally don't respond to.
Well, that's fine, John. My question then would be: you have sort of pinned the blame on Governor Cuomo for high taxes in New York. Is that true or false?
It's during his tenure. It's true. I think that he's done very little to reform the things that are driving people and businesses and jobs out of our state. His economic development initiatives have largely been a failure because they rely on a top-down approach, not a bottom-up approach. And the business, this isn't me just saying this. This is outside analysts who evaluate these things. They view New York as the 49th or 50th worst business climate in the nation. That hasn't improved one whit under Governor Cuomo, and he's actually made it worse, in my view. So many people and businesses, it seems as though the only way businesses will come to New York is if they're given state incentives to come. And that indicates a real serious structural problem in our state.
Governor Cuomo's two of his top aides are now on trial in New York. Joe Prococo, who he described once as his long-lost brother, or his brother who Mario liked more than either of the other two boys. What do you make of this trial?
I'm not going to really comment on it. I think
it raises significant
issues as to how the governor has conducted his administration, given the closeness of this individual. But let's the prosecutors have their case. Let the prosecutors make their case, and let the jury decide guilt or innocence. And I certainly don't wish that individual ill. I've never met the man. I don't like how Governor Cuomo's operating style here in New York, and I think it's often the term that Democrats and Republicans will privately use to you the most is bully. And they feel that his approach is a bullying type approach that is not really compatible with his position. So I think that my issue is with Governor Cuomo on those topics. I think his approach on economic development, as I said, has been wrongheaded. And the facts speak for themselves, Alan. Virtually every county in upstate New York continues to lose population over the last number of years that he's been governor. And his policies have not reversed this trend, nor do they have any prospect of reversing it.
Do you think that the Republicans could lose the House of Representatives?
I think that it's going to be a very contentious election. When, if you look at history, you would suggest that we'll lose seats. On the other hand, there have been some times in recent historical past where a president was elected and the next term, which the out party usually does better, it didn't manifest itself. So all I can focus on is my own race, which later this year I'll be running full steam ahead. And I'm just working really hard right now to try to represent the people of our district.
So do you fear for your political existence?
Not in the least,
Alan. A lot of people have gotten energized in this race.
Not in the least. I will accept whatever verdict I have on Election Day, but I'm going to work hard to win.
There are a lot of people who want to run against you. The polling is showing that the Democrats are energized in a way they haven't been for a long time. How does all of that enter into this race?
Well, you've got to make sure that your voters come out. And remember, Alan, I won my district by about 8.5 points last 2 years ago. That was 25,000 vote margin. President Trump won our district by 6 points 4 years before. President Obama won it by 6 points. So I'm focused on my race. I know that a lot of Democratic activists are motivated, but I think by Election Day, a lot of Republican activists will be motivated as well.
John Fassel, let's talk about DACA. We only have a couple of minutes here. Your position?
I support fixing this problem so that those who were brought here as minor children under the terms of the Homeland Security order in the Obama administration, that they have a chance to achieve legal status, get a green card, and ultimately even apply for citizenship, but they should not have a status that is different than any other immigrant to the country wanting to become a citizen. And at the same time, we have to make sure that 10 years from now, we're not dealing with DACA all over again, so that we have reasonable border security and technology and other legal improvements so that we're not dealing with a whole new stream of DACA folks 10 or 15 years from now.
Do we need a wall?
There are very limited places along the border where a physical barrier is required, and we can talk about that more, but it's not a wall from the Gulf of Mexico to the Pacific Ocean.
So it sounds like that's critical of President Trump, your president.
Now, even President Trump, apparently, even though his rhetoric would lead one to believe otherwise, the administration, I spoke to the Homeland Security Secretary just this past week, and she made it very plain that most of the border security they're looking for is technology. There are very limited areas where they need a physical barrier
to
be improved.
But, John, you know that the president has said the opposite of that he wants a physical wall. You know, there are days he says one thing and there are days he says another thing, but he does say it.
And what does a wall mean to you, Alan? Does that mean a 2,000-mile barrier?
It means a big expense that we don't need.
Well, what does it mean? Does it mean a 2,000-mile barrier? The answer to that question is no. There's no one in Washington, not President Trump or his administration, that is saying that we need to build a wall from the Gulf of Mexico to the Pacific Ocean. That is just simply, that's where his rhetoric gets in the way of people being able to fairly analyze what he's talking about.
Well, John Fassel, always a pleasure to have you here with us. And I do appreciate your coming around and answering these questions. So thank you very much.
Thank you.